This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Oh, it's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Winter is coming.
Toss a coin to your witcher.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
Meanwhile, at the Legion of Doom.
Geeks out on Joy 94.9.
Oh, brilliant.
Ann Timpson is a filmmaker who has producing credits on such indie films as Turbo Kid, Deathgasm, Housebound and more. His first feature-length film as director is hitting on-demand services, perfect for our Housebound time. That film is Come to Daddy, starring Elijah Wood. Ann Timpson, welcome to Geeks Out.
Thanks for having me, Clayton. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into Come to Daddy, your films seem to head into the black comedy sort of genre, if not quite horror comedy. What draws you to that style of film?
Well, I think overall there's been a sort of a horror through line, everything, whether the comedy's been involved, purely subjective in some areas. I don't know. I'm not particularly a huge fan of horror comedies because they have a tendency to polarize when they're very hard to pull off, I find. Like, I think it's such a delicate balancing act to get it right. And so it's sometimes easier to either choose one path or the other. But when they work, it's like, you've hit a home run. So I think there's the challenge of doing that. It's also working with a lot of other collaborators that share similar sensibilities as well, because I've been an executive producer on some of these projects. And, the talent involved in that has been the driving force. So sometimes I've hitched my wagon to the right people at the right time in their careers. And then for the material that I've sort of been developing from scratch, it tends to lean towards more of that sort of black humor. I'd call it gallows humor, especially with the film Come to Daddy. It's taken a long time to actually get to make a feature film. But yeah, I grew up surrounded by those sort of dark British anthology shows as from a very young child, and I guess there was always a really macabre through line of comedy, kind of just as a bit of breathing space. But I, that kind of, watching that material when you're super young, I think it just becomes a coping mechanism with everything that's kind of horrific that comes with it as well. I think it's a mix of a few things.
I think gallows humor is kind of where we're at for a lot of the world right now. So Come to Daddy is perfect for that.
Absolutely. It's a very much a quarantine movie. Limited use of locations, people who probably don't want to be stuck together, trapped together in certain circumstances. So, yeah, ideal quarantine fodder.
You have a great acting credit for Deathgasm, Blood Vomiter. Can we look forward to some equally amazing acting credits in the future?
One of my proudest moments for my career, actually, right up there with Fog Wrangler, I think my other IMDb credit is. Actually, no, the ultimate credit is inspiration for the film Violent Shit, which I think is probably top of the list for IMDb credits. In terms of my acting, if you've ever seen any of my acting on, I also did a cameo in The Devil Dared Me To, which is a Kiwi flick from the mid-2000s. And if you've seen that, you'll know why I've never been asked back to do any other sort of performance, apart from very much in the background as Blood Vomiter number 5.
Come to Daddy is one of the most unique films that I've seen in recent years. The original story idea is credited to you. How did it come about?
Came about my dad, my dear old dead dad, carking in front of me, which was quite traumatic, obviously. And then really it was what happened afterwards, which was a really surreal, strange, cathartic, but also heartbreaking week where I spent 5 days with his corpse in the house as we went about sort of making plans for the send-off and the funeral. And his partner thought it'd be a good idea for the kids to have this sort of grieving process and she bailed and left us to look after Pops. And so, yeah, and so during the day, there'd be people coming to pay respects, and he was just lying there in the coffin, and I knew, you know, the relatives and all sorts of people, but there were people from his past that I didn't really know, and they kind of had these amazing stories, and I started thinking about, you know, how well do you know your parents, you know, really? You have this kind of rose-tinted view most of the time, unless they're horrific, of their past, and you only really get it sort of like, not hearsay, but secondhand information, or sometimes from them if they're not stoic South Island men like my dad was. So it was through other channels. So it was like a lot of new information to process, and as you're sort of grieving, you go through that whole thing of like, all these unanswered questions you didn't have, the things you wanted to say before they left. And so I was just dealing with all of that and his passing. And I, you know, also had like mortality staring me in the face. It was like, holy shit, you know, watching someone die literally in front of you really sort of wakes you up to like time is very relative and it runs out sooner or later. So for you, if you believe in shuffling off this mortal coil, which I tend to, I felt like I needed to maybe shit or get off the pot and get back into being a creative person, that I had all these dreams about being a filmmaker, and then I sort of ended up supporting everyone else's dreams. And so a big part of this cathartic process was like, maybe I could do that for me, but also as like a kind of amazing tribute to him, because I wanted to create something that was, that he would love. You know, there was the type of films that we grew up with watching, these sort of gallows humor, British features when I was really young. And so I just wrote to a writer that I'd worked with before called Toby Harvin and said, here's an idea, what do you think for like a skeleton sort of structure of this thing? And Toby just went, yeah, let's do something, and went away and came back with a crazy first draft. And I was like, this is not what I was expecting. It's not really the sort of film, because I had in mind something really lo-fi that I could pull off with the limited resources and just get it done, because everyone talks about making films for decades, and unless you know how to really get things up and running fast, it's going to take a long, long time. And I just felt like this needed to be expedited, and so we honed it and worked on it. And but I was kind of ended up being super happy that he didn't do that sort of dark, morbid thing that I probably had in my head that you do when you're dealing with grief and everything, because I'm not the filmmaker to make a make a very maudlin, depressing drama. So we kind of framed that personal stuff within this wild genre hybrid, because that was where I really feel most comfortable with. And so, yeah, it was this great collaboration with a writer who totally had the same sensibility, and we just kept honing it and honing it. And then eventually I got in front of Elijah Wood, and he just really clicked and loved it. And we had written it with Elijah in mind, thinking like, he's the guy, he will be our novel, he'd be perfect. And luckily I knew him really well, he's a mate, and we had already worked on a film together called The Greasy Strangler, and so I felt very comfortable about sending it to him. That is a very long answer to a very short question.
Well, actually, you happened to cover my next question as well, so that was great. So I was going to actually ask how Elijah Wood got involved, but you covered that really well. And he is perfect for the film. He actually plays exactly what you need for that role of being the man-child, which I think is a really good description.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's kind of impressive about Elijah is that we've taken, like, possibly the most hated type of person on in the world at the moment, the entitled white millennial brat douchebag, LA douchebag, and actually, you know, turned the audience to have some sort of empathy with that character throughout the proceedings. And that's a testament to Elijah's likability and capability, and just also his gift to be able to ground a performance that's kind of like really in a sort of loopy veneer that we give him, and to make a kind of real sort of human out of it all, you know, because it could really veer off into sort of cartoony land and be way too big. And so I feel like he really nailed it, and his ability to sort of lay a huge foundation for that film was, yeah, part of its success, I feel. Absolutely. I mean, not a part. Absolutely. It was all of its success, let's be honest.
Look, it is a name that's going to get people listening or watching, so it's great, but I think the work that is done in the writing and the directing is also really amazing. So it's a project that came together beautifully.
It is. I mean, all films like alchemy, that's the term I always use when discussing them, because it can either just, like, you know, turn into a beautiful spell, or it's going to blow up in your face. And that's kind of, I mean, you, no matter how much preparation you do and how much control, there is a little bit of kind of magic that happens that you will never have control over. And it's, you know, because this is a film that had zero rehearsal time. Literally, people turned up and, you know, on set and said, "Hi, my name's Martin Donovan. What do I do? Go lie down over there." It was kind of that lo-fi guerrilla experience, and so in some ways that kind of energy excites people. You know, sometimes when you, maybe it's a bit more lethargic, you've got more money to sort of slow everything down, you don't get as much out of it. It's really, you know, it's just hard to pigeonhole what's going to work on the day, and I just felt like the right cast worked splendidly. I mean, you have ideas of cast, you know, but you never probably get the cast that's written down at the very beginning of the day. It's just that we just had a lot of luck getting who we really wanted, which was phenomenal.
As you said, the alchemy of movies is very unique. And one of the things that I think made this movie was the visual eye candy of the area, including the property itself. Where was this building?
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I feel like it did so much heavy lifting for me as a first time filmmaker, like nailing that. Took a long time to make sure that I felt confident that location was going to bring a lot in terms of atmosphere to the finished film, which will make up for any shortcomings I have as a director. So I spent a long time scouting around an island in off Vancouver called Vancouver Island, surprisingly. But there was an area called Tofino, which is like a surf town on the northwest coast of that place, and it's kind of really wild and isolated. And we just sort of went around looking at properties, and that one was, yeah, the minute I saw it, I was like, that's it. I can't make the film now without having that, which is the last thing any producer wants to hear out of the lips of a director. But I really felt that it encompassed everything, the kind of visual elements that I had in my head, which is like a great sort of rush to a director when you start seeing things playing out visually exactly how you see them in the head when you're sort of prepping things. If it can be that close, then you really feel like you're on the path to something that's going to start congealing into where you had the original overall vision for the film. So yeah, it was something that we just kept looking until we got it. It was like, goddamn, this is perfect. And then we just had to hide a lot of things that kind of spoiled the isolation factor, like the giant hotel that was literally just across from it and everything else.
Antonson, thank you so much.
Look, it's been so much fun. I could do this all day with you guys, so thanks for having me on. Hi, I'm Antonson. I'm the director of Come to Daddy, which is available now in Australia on demand. When I'm in quarantine, I like to listen to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
It was great to speak to Art Timpson about his film Come to Daddy, but now we're going to do a review. A man in his 30s, a man-child as it's often referred to, travels to a remote cabin to connect with his estranged father after receiving a letter inviting him. It's a pretty straightforward film in terms of the concept, but it kind of gets a bit crazy after that. I would class this, as we said before, as a horror, or not horror comedy necessarily, but black comedy. Tamsin, do you have a definition? What would you call it?
Yeah, it's definitely a darkly thriller comic. There's definitely laughs in it, but violence is extreme. I wasn't expecting that.
No, it sort of wasn't. Actually, to be honest, a lot of the film, I wasn't expecting anything that happened.
That is actually so true. It starts off very relaxed and slow-paced and interesting, and then really holds because you know it's going to be a horror of some sort, but how? And then the twists and turns are just quite astonishing.
Yeah, it sort of heads into this weird space where you kind of just him meeting his dad. His dad's a bit of a dick. And it then kind of unravels from there, and it sounds like it's already unraveled, but that's actually the sane part of it.
That's so true.
I really enjoyed just the fact that this film doesn't take itself too seriously at any point, and really, really enjoyed the fact that it's really a unique, there's too many reallys in there, a unique experience, which is, you know, pretty rare these days.
Yeah, extremely unique. And the way it held the tension. I'm not very good at watching movies in my own house because there's a lot of distractions. Mm-hmm. I sat through this the whole way through, hanging on to each and every bit, going, but what's going on now? What does that mean? And making up my own points. And normally I can pick a movie because, you know, you can read what's going to happen and, okay, this is what's going to happen. No, didn't happen. It was quite amazing.
Yeah, things happened that I didn't think were going to happen, but then they happened and it was very confusing. So, no, it wasn't really that confusing. It all actually made very straightforward sense.
Oh, definitely. When it got to the end, you're like, I don't think there were any gaps, or it was tied in nicely and... Well, not nice. It was tied in. And quite... They humanised the characters. So even though you went through parts where Elijah Woods was just amazing.
Absolutely.
But you... It, relatable and then not relatable and then relatable, quite cleverly done.
A lot of the supporting cast in this are faces that we've seen before, but you don't really know their names. I found that anyway. There's like, oh, I know them. Oh, I know them. Oh, I know them. Did you have the same experience?
Yes. And I had to look them up at points as well. I'm like, he looks really familiar. Who's he? Oh, yeah, he's that. Oh, who's she? And, yeah, very quite well put together cast as well as how they related to each other and got on.
Like Michael Smiley is a face I definitely recognised. He played Jethro, one of the... unkind characters in the film, but yeah, he's just an actor that I've seen around. Also, Stephen McHattie is a actor that I've definitely seen around, but not quite sure from where. And then Martin Donovan, who I think is probably the one that I would know the face most out, other than Elijah Wood, of course. So yeah, just I actually really like when you see films and you go, oh, they're an actor I don't know that well, but it's great to see their face in this film.
Yeah, definitely. And especially with the cast that's a lot older and, you know, they've been around before. And so it's really nice to see them being extended into this genre.
I still watch movies and see Elijah Wood as like a 20-year-old. And I don't think this film made it any different for me. He still seems so young to me. Do you feel the same, or did he seem a bit older here for you?
Oh, definitely. And the way they describe him in the synopsis as a man-child, I was like, that is exactly... I mean, it's not the role, it's the persona. He is this, you know, he's trying to be the mature adult, obviously, you know, mid-30s, you know, holding his own ground, coming and getting into everything, but then, oh, yeah, he's still... teenage attitude at some points.
Definitely, like the role is meant to be someone who has never properly matured, like a wine. But it just played so beautifully by him, and I really love the fact that he is making a lot of indie films and hasn't like gone mainstream, because I think he's perfect for these roles.
Definitely, I can't wait to see him in more. I think he's got so much more in him, and this is just, again, he, as you say, the indie films just suit him to a T, and he's amazing in them. I actually now realise I could watch him in anything.
Absolutely. Probably the biggest issue in this film was his haircut and his moustache were kind of the dodgy
no,
side.
No, pants.
Oh, pants were an issue too. Actually, the outfits were quite hilarious and really... suited the film perfectly. So did the character perfectly.
Oh, definitely.
My minor criticism is that I'm not a huge fan of toilet humour, and there was just a tiny little bit too much of that in this for me. But, you know, it's pretty minor and I could definitely get through it without a problem. Anything that stood out as a bit of an issue for you?
Probably the violence when he didn't want to be violent and it was kind of forced into it. I found that a little bit on the unnerving side. It didn't gel with the character, but then it did, then it didn't. So, yeah, strange but good.
Yeah, I think that this was definitely a very unnerving part of the film, as, you know, was the toilet humour. So I think all these things are created to create an atmosphere of sort of just unsettleness, and you never quite settle into this film because I guess you kind of know something's coming, but it just never quite feels like you can be comfortable, which is not a criticism. That's actually, it's a very good thing in a film.
No, and as I said earlier, that uncomfortableness makes you pay attention because you're like, okay, come on, give me something I can relax into, and you're not. You're like, it's something different every time, so you've got to pay attention. You've got to be on your toes, and it's quite amazing.
So this is going to be available across video on demand services, so you can actually watch it now. It's available right now. But Tamsin, how many,
How many tigers?
Okay, let's go with tigers. How many tigers out of 10?
I reckon I'd have to give this a 7. Petering on an 8, but I think a hard 7, definitely. Very good, kept you engaged, kept you there. And it's funny. I like violence, but this caught me off guard, I think. So that's the only reason I'd probably drop a couple of points.
Oh, look, I was going to go 7 as well. I'm going to go 7 letters to Daddy out of 10. Letters from Daddy out of 10. It's a film that I definitely got into, definitely enjoyed. And I think most people who kind of like indie films are actually going to enjoy this one as well.
Yeah, definitely. An indie film, attention to detail.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.